Session 681, February 11, 1974, reading from The Unknown Reality, a Seth book, Volume 1, by Jane Roberts, notes by Robert F. Butts. Seth, now good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, and Rupert is correct, so give us a moment. What I'm about to explain is difficult. Purposefully, it is not as yet in any of the books, simply because certain beliefs must be dispensed with before these ideas can at all be accepted. It is not that I'm holding back so much as that in your terms what follows is dependent upon an understanding of concepts presented earlier. People who are still worrying about one soul, gods, and devils must be helped to relate to greater realities from their own framework, and gently led away from it if possible. Probabilities have been mentioned in such a way that alternative realities are presented, showing such people that choices are available. The deeper explanations, however, demand a further explanation of ideas of consciousness and a certain reorientation. It is extremely important that you bear in mind the importance of free will and the presence of your own identity as you think of it. With that preamble, let me continue then. It is not so much a matter of Rupert's vocabulary, incidentally, since even a specialized, specific one would only present these ideas in its own distorted fashion. It is more a problem of basic language itself, as you are acquainted with it. Words do not exist, for example, for some of the ideas I hope to convey. We will, at any rate, begin. All probable worlds exist now. All probable variations on the most minute aspect in any reality exist now. You weave in and out of probabilities constantly, picking and choosing as you go along. The cells within your body do the same thing. I told you once that there were pulses of activity in which you blinked off and on, this applying even to atomic and subatomic particles. Note 1. In several of the sessions he delivered in 1970 through 71 for Seth Speaks, Seth explained how atoms and molecules phase in and out of our physical system. See especially the 567th session in Chapter 16. Quote, "Now the same sort of behavior occurs in a deep, basic, secret, and unexplored psychological level. Some of the probable systems arising out of such activity would be quite alien to us. One such fluctuation might take several thousand of your years, which would be experienced, say, as a second of your time." Jane elaborates upon related ideas from her own viewpoint in Chapter 10, among others, in her Adventures in Consciousness. Returning now to Session 681, you assign as real, present here and now, only that activity that is your signal. You are not aware of the others. When people think in terms of oneself, they of course identify with one body. You know that the cellular structure of it changes constantly. The body is at any given moment, however, a mass conglomeration of energy formed from that rich bank of probable activity. The body is not stable in the terms usually thought of. On deeper biological levels, the cells straddle probabilities and trigger responses. Consciousness rides upon and within the pulses mentioned earlier and forms its own organizations of identity. Each probability, probable only in relation to and from the standpoint of another probability, is inviolate. However, in that it is not destroyed. Once formed, the pattern will follow its own nature. The organizations of consciousness grow, even as cells grow into organs. Groups of probable selves then can and do form their own identity structure, which is quite aware of the probable selves involved. In your reality, experience is dependent upon time, but all experience is not so structured. There are, for example, parallel events that are followed as easily as you follow consecutive events. The structure of probabilities deals with parallel existence on all levels. Your consciousness picks and chooses to accept as real the results of and ramifications of only certain overall purposes, desires, or intents. You follow these through a time structure. Your focus allows other, just as legitimate experience to become invisible or unfelt. In the same way that you latch upon one personal biological history, you latch upon but one mass Earth history. Others go on about you all the time, and other probable selves of your own experience their histories parallel to yours. In practical terms of sense data, those worlds do not meet. In deeper terms, they collide. Any of the infinite numbers of events that could have happened to you and Rupert do happen, your attention span simply does not include such activity. Such endless creativity can seem so dazzling that the individual would appear lost within it. Footnote 2. Rob, long before this, Seth was concerned that Jane said I might feel insignificant once we attempted to grasp the endless ramifications of consciousness as he was explaining them to us. As he said in the 29th session for February 26, 1964, quote Seth, later I will attempt to show you where the boundaries are, though, with a laugh, there really are no boundaries, that form a variety of such planes, realities, into a sphere of relation in which to some extent cause and effect operates as you understand it. Beyond that, for a long time, there will be no need for me to go any more deeply. I will speak of the entity, the personalities, the reincarnations, the diverse personality fragment groupings, the planes with which you are similar or can understand, and ultimately try to deal with your questions, implied if not spoken, as to where entities came from to begin with. Quote, needless to say, I wanted you to know that there is much more than even this, complexities that are truly astounding, intelligences that operate in what I suppose you would call a gestalt fashion, building blocks of vitalities of truly unbelievable maturity, awareness, and comprehension. These are the near ultimate, as I understand such things. This material should not make you feel unimportant or insignificant. The framework is so woven that each particle of consciousness is dependent upon every other. The strength of one adds to the strength of all. The weakness of one weakens the whole. The energy of one recreates the whole. The striving of one increases the potentiality of everything that is, and this places great responsibility upon every consciousness. I would even advise a double reading of the above sentence, for it is a keystone and a vital one. Rising to challenges is a basis for existence in every aspect of existence. It is the developer of all abilities, and at the risk of being trite, it is the responsibility of even the most minute particle of consciousness to use its own abilities and all of its abilities to the utmost. Upon the degree to which this is done rests the power and coherence of everything that is. See also 453rd session for December 4, 1968, in the appendix of the Seth material. End quote. Footnote 2. And returning to the text of session 681, Seth, yet consciousness forms its own organizations and psychic interactions at all levels. Any consciousness automatically tries to express itself in all probable directions and does so. In so doing, it will experience all that is through its own being, though interpreted, of course, through the familiar reality of its own. You grow probable selves as a flower grows petals. Each probable self, however, will follow through in its own reality. That is, it will experience to the fullest those dimensions inherent to you. You pick and choose one birth and one death in your terms. To me, notes Rob, Seth, you died as a young boy in an operation. However, in this life, as you think of it, you died again in the war, where you were a pilot. But those are not your official deaths, so you do not recognize them. Footnote 3. According to Seth, then, in one probability, I failed to survive the operation I underwent for appendicitis in this reality when I was 11 years old. My second probable death took place sometime during the years of my military service, 1943 through 46 in World War II. It's interesting to note that Seth says I was a pilot, and hence an officer in that probability. In the reality I know, I served in the ATC, that's the Air Transport Command, as an aircraft instrument specialist and mechanic, with the rank of staff sergeant. While on duty in some of the remote islands of the Pacific, however, I managed to get in some flying time, though not as a pilot. And now continuing in the session 681, where footnote 3 was inserted, Seth. Science likes to think that it deals with predictable action. It perceives such a small amount of data, however, and in such a limited area, that the great inner unpredictability of any molecule, atom, or wave is not apparent. Scientists perceive only what appears within your system, and that often appears predictable. Give us a moment. True order and organization, even of biological structure, can be achieved only by granting a basic unpredictability. I am aware that this sounds startling. Basically, however, the motion of any wave or particle or entity is unpredictable, freewheeling and undetermined. Your life structure is a result of that unpredictability. Your psychological structure is also. However, because you are presented with a fairly cohesive picture in which certain laws seem to apply, you think that the laws come first and physical reality follows. Instead, the cohesive picture is the result of the unpredictable nature that is and must be basic to all energy. Statistics provide an artificial, predetermined framework in which your reality is then examined. Mathematics is a theoretical, organized structure that of itself imposes your ideas of order and predictability. Statistically, the position of an atom can be theorized, but no one knows where any given atom is at any time. Footnote 4. I thought that in this, his last sentence especially, Seth was flirting with the principle of uncertainty or indeterminacy as postulated in 1927 by the German physicist Werner Heisenberg. In quantum mechanics, this axiom maintains that it's not possible to simultaneously ascertain the momentum and position of a subatomic wave particle, like an electron, say, electrons being one of the quantities that make up atoms. The day after this session was held, I asked Jane if she'd heard of Heisenberg. She hadn't, nor did she understand his work, as best I could explain it to her. Just before break at 11:10, Seth offers up another fill-up about atoms. Now continuing in session 681, Seth, you are examining probable atoms. You are composed of probable atoms. Give us a moment. Consciousness, to be fully free, had to be endowed with unpredictability. All that is had to surprise himself, itself, herself, constantly, through freely granting itself its own freedom, or forever repeat itself. This basic unpredictability then follows through on all levels of consciousness and being. A certain cellular structure may seem inevitable within its own frame of reference only because opposing or contradictory probabilities do not appear within them. In your terms, consciousness is able to hold its own sense of identity by accepting one probability, one physical life, for example, and maintaining its identity through a lifetime. Even then, certain events will be remembered and others forgotten. The consciousness also learns to handle alternate moments as it matures. As it does so mature, it forms a new, larger framework of identity as the cell forms into an organ on another level. In your terms, the phrase is necessary, the moment point. The present is the point of interaction between all existences and reality. Footnote 5 here on moment point. Rob, Seth's concept of the moment point is implicit in his material as I quote it in Note 1 for this session. See also the 514th session in Chapter 2 of Seth Speaks and the 668th session in Chapter 19 of Personal Reality. At the age of 25, however, 9 years before the beginning of the sessions, Jane expressed an intuitive grasp of the moment point in these lines of her poem, More Than Men. Jane, between each ticking of the clock, long centuries pass, in universes hidden from our own. And returning to the text of Session 681, Seth, all probabilities flow through it. Though one of your moment points may be experienced as centuries or as a breath in other probable realities of which you are a part. Rupert is at this moment feeling massive. He is experiencing several things. The inner cellular body consciousness feels itself massive, while to you cells are minute. The sounds of the package, for example, Rob says, as Seth Jane crumpled an empty cigarette package. Or the fingernails across the table, Rob says, demonstrated, are magnified, for in the cellular world they are an important outside the self cosmic event, messages of great importance. The cellular consciousness experiences itself as eternal, though to you the cells have a brief life. But those cells are aware of the body's history, in your terms, and in a much more familiar fashion than you are aware of the Earth's history. The cells are also aware of probabilities in a more familiar fashion than you are, as they manipulate the past and future history of the body. Rupert now, again, is experiencing massiveness, as in your idea of probabilities, the cellular structure feels its vast endurance. Working with events not even real to you, it produces a physical structure that maintains identity and predictability out of a vastly creative network. That network is unpredictable, yet from it Rupert can predictably put ashes into that shell. Rob, Jane held up her favorite ashtray, the abalone shell we'd found in Baja California in 1958, and tapped some ashes into it from her cigarette. Seth, the predictability of that gesture rests upon the basis of an unpredictability, in which multitudinous other actions could have occurred, and in other realities do occur. You had better give us a moment and rest your hand. Rod knows Jane had been speaking steadily in trance, if with many pauses, for 78 minutes. Now she still sat upright in her chair, sipping beer, eyes closed, a minute past. Seth. Now, your beliefs and intents cause you to pick from an unpredictable group of actions, those that you want to happen. You experience those events. Your desire to live straddled the death of the child in an operation. The child's desire to die chose that event. People are as free as atoms are. Give us a moment. In no way could you predict what would happen to the child in that photograph of yourself. Note 6. Rob, Seth referred to the photograph my father had taken of me when I was about 2 years old. See the appropriate note in the beginning of the 679th session. Since Seth mentioned predictions in connection with the photograph, this is a good time to present a few of the things he said in an earlier session about his own ability to predict and about the subject in general. Jane and I have found this very useful material to keep in mind. From the 234th session of February 16, 1966, quote Seth, now, often precognitive information will appear to be wrong. In some cases, this is because a self has chosen a different probable event for physical materialization than the one predicted. I have access to the field of probabilities and you do not. Egotistically, to me, your past, present, and future merge into one. On the other hand, as I have told you, you change your past continually. It does not appear to change to you, for you change with it. You alter your future in the same manner. In such cases, it is necessary that the correct channel of probable events be perceived. Correct meaning the channel which shall be ultimately chosen for actualization by the subject. These choices, however, are based upon your changing perception of past and present. Because I have a larger scope of perception than you, I can, with greater facility, predict what may happen. But this is dependent upon my prediction as to which choice of probable events you will make, and the choice is still your own. Predictions, per se, do not contradict the theory of free will, though free will is dependent upon much more than any freedom of the ego alone. If the ego were allowed to make all the choices with no veto power from other layers of the self, you would all be in a sad position indeed. I can therefore perceive far more than you can of your own future. I am hardly omnipotent, however, nor, strictly speaking, is such omnipotence possible. And now continuing, Seth, session 681. In no way now can you predict what will happen to you now. You can choose to accept as your reality any number of given unpredictable events. In that respect, the choice is yours, but all the events you do not accept occur nevertheless. In a very small measure, you can see how this works when you think of your mother in, say, her last years, and compare your ideas of her with those of your brothers, Lyndon and Richard. She was a different person to each of you. She was herself. But in the interweavings of probabilities, while certain agreed upon historic events were accepted, she admitted into her reality whatever portions of your probable reality she chose. Each of you had a different mother. Probabilities intersect then in your experience, and their intersection you call reality. Biologically and physically, these are interchanges, coming togethers, consciousness adopting a focus. Again, Rupert is still experiencing massiveness. All of the atoms and molecules that have composed your body since your birth and will compose it until your death, in your terms, exist now. So even your knowledge of the body is experienced in a time form that is bit by bit. Part of Rupert's feelings of massiveness comes from the mass experience of the body existing all at once. Therefore, to him, the body feels larger. Calculations impossible to describe occur, so that from this basic unpredictability, you experience what seem to be predictable actions. This is only because you focus upon those actions that make sense in your reality and ignore all others. I am not speaking symbolically, of course, when I say you died as a youngster. Nor was any harsh reality forced upon the mother by the dying child, for that portion of your mother was the part that rejected having had the child. Atoms can move in more directions than one at once. You only perceive scientifically the probable motion you are interested in. The same applies to subjective experience. Now take your break. Rob notes, 1110. Jane slowly came out of one of her longest session trances. She'd been under for an hour and 42 minutes. I've indicated but a few of the many long pauses she took. She still felt massive. Her eyes rolled up, then closed again. Things are really weird, like the sky's cracking. Seth talking about it sort of controlled things, but now my head's getting really big. I roused her with a call, and she said, "Yeah, it's wild. I don't know whether I should break it or go along with it. I feel like my head is real big now and going around to the right and spinning. It's huge." 11:15. And when there isn't any sound outside, everything's ringing the way your ears do, only more so. Now my whole body's really big, massive. I might end it. It's funny. It's not terribly pleasant. My teeth seem really huge. Everything, my feet. Jane smiled as I called her again. I just got the image of being a giant in a giant room. Then something I don't understand, an image of myself as a gorilla or something like that. I'm as tall as the ceiling, trying to knock the walls down. I'm not understanding what's going on very well. Now I'm getting bigger. I think I'm going to come out of it. My face isn't doing anything, is it? Changing in any way? 11:21. I had the feeling of my hair being long and parted in the middle, as though I've got some kind of humanoid features, you know, with the hair hanging down on each side of my face, which is something like an animal's, but with very intelligent eyes, very warm and soft. Footnote number 8. Rob. Jane's assertion tonight that she felt a humanoid aspect of herself reminded me of the materials she'd given almost a year ago in Chapter 12 of Personal Reality on the idea of natural therapy in animals, the animal medicine men. She came up with that information on her own, too, and during a session break. On that occasion, she was more of an observer. There was quite a difference in physical size between the images she had seen then and her vision of herself this evening. Yet there were similarities also, for of that earlier experience, she said, I saw creatures who walked upright, hairy, with brilliant, compassionate eyes. See the 648th session at 11:30. Now continuing here in session 681, Jane finally opened her eyes. Her ears still rang, so loudly that she asked me if I heard the same sound. I told her I didn't. We walked around the room. I made her half a sandwich. It's sort of frustrating, she said. It's as though I'm seeing or feeling what I'm capable of at the moment. But I know there's more there behind that. I can feel it, but I can't get it out. As she ate, Jane said, the noises in my mouth are real loud. You're not used to it. When she sipped beer, she felt the cold liquid descend inside her body, but displaced to the right of her esophagus. She recited a list of opposing feelings in her own body that she was simultaneously aware of in her bigger body. Her right foot was very cold, her back very hot. I got her a sweater, for our living room had cooled off. The February night was very cold. Seth. Only out of unpredictability can an infinite number of orders or ordered systems arise. Anything less than complete unpredictability will ultimately result in stagnation, or orders of existence that, in the long run, are self-defeating. Only from unpredictability can any system emerge that can be predictable within itself. Only within complete freedom of motion is any ordered motion truly possible. From the chaotic bed of your dreams springs your ordered daily organized action. In your reality, the behavior of your consciousness and your molecules are highly connected. Your type of consciousness presupposes a molecular consciousness, and your kind of consciousness is inherent in molecular consciousness, inherent within your system, but not basically predictable. Predictability is simply another word for significance. Unpredictability, looking at itself in a variety of different fashions, finds certain portions of itself significant and forms certain orders or ordered sequences about itself. In one of our very early sessions, I told you that you perceive from a vast field only certain data that you find meaningful. That data could only arise from the bed of unpredictability. Only unpredictability can provide the greatest source of probable orders. Your cells are quite able to handle different orders of events. Therefore, in the dream state, they are able, in their individual ways, to perceive your experience and from it to choose those actualities you want made real in your terms. In dreams, you are acquainted with probable events from which you then choose. To me, notes Rob, so before you died as a child, you knew that you could choose or choose that death. In greater terms, you chose both life and death, and the picture of you at the age of 16, footnote 9, was never taken in one reality. Footnote 9, reading Rob, on facing pages of our album, Jane and I have a pair of large, rather formal photographs of ourselves that we've often joked about. As it happened, we looked at them earlier this evening. Both of them were taken in 1936. Jane, in her photograph, was 6.5 years old. I'm 16 in mine, and 1 year short of finishing high school. More than once, Jane has asked me what I'd have thought at that age had I been aware that my wife-to-be was a round-faced little kid still playing with paper dolls. And now continuing the text of 681, Seth, we have quite all that Rupert can handle this evening, and this is a beginning. Rob notes, now Seth came through with half a page of material for Jane, then wound up the evening's work with this joking comment, Seth. His probable brain can translate only so much of this at one time. Rob, yes. Good night. 12.06 a.m. Jane still felt somewhat massive. A few notes added the next day. She slept restlessly and found herself giving material on probabilities just about all night. She woke up often, and at such times was relieved to discover that she hadn't been holding a session that I wasn't recording. As it was, she laughed. The material was still safe. We'd get it at a regular session. Jane has often told me that usually on such nighttime occasions, she doesn't feel Seth's presence or hear his voice. Instead, she's just aware of the material running through her. In session 681.